But the gist of that history is this, that those earlier thinkers who broke out of the mythological explanations typical of Greek culture, they tended to seek theoretical explanations of what we would call scientific matters, looking for the first principle that helped organize the universe. And they came up with any number of interesting suggestions, but no one of them seemed compelling. And when Socrates began his own philosophical ruminations, those great discussions and conversations which are known to us by way of the dialogues of Plato, and then when Plato continues, especially in creating new dialogues, which probably the historical Socrates never himself participated in, but in which he is the central character for Plato's own ongoing philosophy. With Socrates and with Plato, there is a strong stress on the contemplative dimension, Plato's world of ideas, his sense of the good as the predominant form that organizes and illuminates all the rest of forms, his sense of the ideal of justice or the ideal of courage or the ideal of temperance. Socrates and Plato are cultivating a life of intellect and a life of contemplation, which is something that Aristotle much admires. And so part of, I think, what he's doing here is paying his debt to the fact of the deep happiness can come from living an intellectual life. I don't think that that should be regarded as an arrogant claim, although I suspect that it may strike some people as arrogant. It's certainly not in any way intended to denigrate those who work in the active life, work in political life. I think it's not so much there's any arrogance there. I think it's rather Aristotle being alert to the fact that very few people will have the leisure he or Socrates or Plato had to conduct this kind of thinking for most of their life. I mean, it's one of the things I most appreciate about the work I do, that is, besides religious work, being an academic and having the opportunity of teaching very bright students, reading great books, having great conversations, and to think that this supports an entire life. It's one of the things that is a great and glorious part of the academic tradition. And I think Aristotle is talking about the fact that there's a way in which this kind of contemplative life, as practiced by Socrates and Plato and by himself, is a privilege, and he had to acknowledge the privilege. Perhaps it's something like those who listen to these tapes, that one has the opportunity to continue one's own education in this regard. But another crucial aspect to the problem, and something that I think Aristotle is also insistent upon when he is suggesting the contemplative life is a way to attain happiness that's even better than the way to obtain happiness by the practical political life, is that he has a sense that you have to ask not just about the person doing the contemplating, but you have to ask about the object being contemplated. And here his sense is that the many, many aspects of the world that may be considered, the aspects of the world that we make when we're considering politics or poetics and doing Greek tragedy or Greek constitutions, or whether we're dealing with the arts and the sciences and the various forms of technology and all the kinds of making that are involved in making the material elements of a world, all of the particular practical elements that may be contemplated and that may be considered under the perspective of science and of contemplation, they pale in comparison when one considers the highest possible object. And one sees here in the 10th book of the Nicomachean Ethics one of Aristotle's treatment of God. There are other treatments. Aristotle also discusses God, for instance, in the course of his book, The Physics, and the course of his book, The Metaphysics. In the course of discussing God and the physics, one thinks in Aristotle's physics largely of a push-pull universe, of what is it that's forcing movement in something else, and what is it that's being pushed or moved. And Aristotle's, one of his arguments for the existence of God in the physics, is the notion that because of all the motions that take place in this world, there has to be something beyond them, there has to be something beyond them, but there would be no movement now in this world unless there were something that was an unmoved mover. So Aristotle thinks that he can even prove the existence of God from physics. In the course of the metaphysics, he has yet another and a more sophisticated and a more abstract proof for the existence of God. His notion is that God, whatever God is, must be something so worthy, something so noble, that he really wouldn't have any time or energy left to be considering anything other than that which is itself most noble. And so he envisions God not as being deeply interested in the world in a way that, say, the Jewish or Christian or Muslim traditions think of God as a creator and one who is actively intervening in history.